Well, sometimes they have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.
Look, I don't have to do this.
You don't have any choice.
I'm trying to help you people. Now, why won't you accept that?
It's in our DNA. You have to do what old man says.
What makes you such a threat?
We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power, Ray.
You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Anahuacis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Friends, this is your co-host, Will Bluewater. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Bluewater, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
Grandfather, teach me the ways of the old, so that I may remember who I am.
Osio, Ogilisti, Adehelisti, Tohiju, Tohigu, welcome to the program this evening. This is Will Bluewater. We're on Prophecy Keepers Radio. Tonight we're going to talk with Michael Niels. He's a longtime Native Unity Movement supporter. He knew Mad Bear Anderson. He knew Rolling Thunder, Leonard Crow Dog, Stan Krippner. He worked with Fred Walking Badger and Tigre Perez. And we're going to have a good time tonight. But first, we've got his birthday, and Mark is going to talk about his Mayan birth sign. So take it away, Mark.
Okay. Let's see. In a traditional Mayan day count, he was born on a day called 12-ish, the Jaguar glyph. It's in the Akbal cycle, the dreaming cycle. So probably he probably got along with cats, jaguars, and stuff like that. That kind of
right.
Feline energy, mystical stuff. Even as a kid, he probably kind of person that liked to hang out or dig and go underground, hang out in the kiva or something like that. Even when he was younger, probably felt
or trees. Cats. Some cats are tweeters.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and probably most kids are usually scared of the dark. He probably actually got around in the dark probably pretty good as a kid. Probably still does. So the 12 is a spiritual catalyst type of energy, and then the jaguar energy is feminine, magical. Jaguar is the top of the totem, so it's one of the more powerful at the top, actually, of the pantheon of Central and South American animals on the totems.
Well, there's a prophecy about the return to the seat of the jaguar during these times, so this would be interesting.
Yeah, if you look, actually, many of the jaguar thrones, the jaguar throne or jaguar hearthstone was the first of the three hearthstones that were set up at the beginning of the creation. So, hold on, just give me a second. I'm trying to do something else here. So just give me a second. Okay. So, yeah, the jaguar hearthstone. And that was the first of the three hearthstones. That would correspond to one of the three hearthstones.
Hi, friends. This is Will Bluewater. If you have been listening to our program for long, then you know that Mark the Badger Borcherding does a Mayan birth reading for each of our interview guests. Mark suggested that he give away a free reading for each donation of $20 or more to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a ministry of Aklavan Native American Church,
and do everything
the White Roots of Peace. So please support Prophecy Keepers Radio by making your free will offering at nativeamericanchurch.us, and you'll receive this gift reading. If you choose to make a recurring donation, once you've received your own reading, you can give readings away as free gifts. So why not head over to nativeamericanchurch.us and make an offering right now. Hope to be talking with you soon. Bye now.
I'm sorry, folks. My mic was off and sounded like Mark needed a few seconds break. Anyway, sorry I confused you, Mark.
Yeah, I had
Mark,
several
my
things
apologies.
Going on here. anyway, so... You there?
Yeah.
Go ahead, right ahead.
So the jaguar hearthstone actually was the first of the three hearthstones set up, and that would correspond to the belt stars in the constellation of Orion. So now switching over, looking at his birth from the standpoint of the sixth sun, we'll do the forward flow of time, way we normally perceive time, then the backward flow of time, and then where the two time flows to come together. So on the forward flow, this is going more localized from birth going forward, he has a lot of the serpent energy. That would be the Coatl and Quetzalcoatl, or the water part of the Lord of the Wind and the Water. The water part would be more probably connected onto him, and it would be a lot of things that have to deal with just basic, surviving instinct and sacred power of things and tapping into the underlying things of creation for that. Probably a kind of a partnering thing that's probably been following him throughout his life is just a lot of things just kind of happening, synchronicities. that probably have played a pretty big part in what he's been doing, how he's been moving along the path of life, and especially in areas of thought, thinking and thoughts would be a big aspect of it, especially when those thinking and thoughts are directed into working and helping and serving other people. That's probably been a constant thing following him throughout his life, I think. The Sakangalis is a red color, so the color red might have been predominant in his life all along as well. And he may have even seen the two together, with a serpent or snake and a red color both, or the direction of the east, because red, traditional Mayan thing, the medicine well red would be usually placed in the east. So now looking at the other flow of time coming backwards at us on the backward flow coming from the next world cycle into us, his, and so this would be things showing up more recently in his life. Say, we usually say around 1997, 98, a little bit before, a little bit after that till now, and maybe getting stronger. And in his, it's about things with the a family of things, and I want to say family, I don't necessarily mean just biological family. It could go extend far out. It could extend up even out into the Star Nation. Catalyzing and making things happen. It's and it has a pretty singular component here of what you call everlasting or never-ending love. So that's probably it would be very similar to in his thoughts. That's probably directing him right now is probably very similar to what people that have a near-death experience and come back and say. You know, they basically say, you know, on Earth, all of our job, our main job is the same job description. We're apostles of love. I would suspect in his life that's been becoming very, very, very strong. In coordination with that, working with that, he has eagle, some eagle energy here. So that would be the eagle component of the prophecy of the eagle and the condor. And in that prophecy, the eagle's more related to the north, the northern hemisphere, the mind, thinking. Some people even equate it to the technological aspect of things, which can be used for good or bad either way, but how to use that. But also, eagle also is the vision, having visions, revelations, prophecies of things and things in the mind. And his, it's going to be really tied into a couple things very powerfully, and that's going to be transmutation of things, moving one thing almost alchemical, moving thing from one thing into another on a maybe a large thing. It's like it's in the Mayan tradition, you know, the death, the skull glyph, it's not something they fear. They look at life is born out of death, so death is the seed of life. And so I wouldn't be surprised if that's been coming up for him quite a bit, especially when it is also connected with something that at first wouldn't seem to make sense, and that's community and the cooperation within a community. So I would say a lot of his work that where he will really shine in terms of that energy that's coming back from him from the next world cycle into this is to help him in those arenas, how to change things, transform things into a community of cooperation and family and strong values and things like that, and the ego energy giving the vision and stuff to be able to accomplish that and direct it. This particular day is also associated with one of the Lakota elders, specifically Wallace Black Elk. So, and it's the glyph is also a glyph that shows up on almost probably about, I'd say about 50% of the births of the white buffaloes have been born on this same glyph that his backward flow of time is showing up on here. So there might be a component here in recent years coming from kind of the Lakota tradition and the white buffalo that may be showing up in his life already, or maybe it's going to start showing up. And it's interesting because it might tie in Blue Otter with the whole thing with the ghost dance, because the thing with the Lakota and Wounded Knee and all that, and all kind of the misunderstanding and misdirection happened there. So maybe that's part of this too as well in this reading coming to mind. So where these two time flows together come together forms the bridge, the gateway, or doorway between from one world cycle to the next. And it's showing up again with that Akbal energy, the thing we talked about when he was in the younger and maybe caves, jaguars, and the darkness and the dream time from the Aboriginal part. So it's showing, you know, the way he really moves from one world to the next and brings others with him is through watch his dreams, and the intuitional guidance is going to be very strong, and directing pathways, which new paths and things that open up. And it's tapping back in again to that eagle thing again. So we have two times eagle showing up here. So that eagle component, I'd watch very carefully for any eagle thing showing up in his life. And it, but in this case, the eagle's not as much about the transmutation and community. It's more about, remember we're talking about synchronicities? Synchronicities, movement of creation, the spiraling movement of creation, and truth. Those two things kind of connected together are going to show up here. It's very significant. And so he has one red symbol and two black ones. So the red in the east and the two black ones would be in the west. Okay.
Well, what do you think about that, Michael? Does that sound familiar?
Yeah, all very interesting. One of my children, Alitra, she teaches down at the University of Arizona, is a cat researcher, and she and her husband have been the documenters of the jaguar El Jefe here in Arizona.
Wow.
But, yeah, into the jaguar, and I did go up the mountain Vision Quest in the 60s. I don't think there were too many of us back then to it, so that sort of dream cycle thing fits in into it. Yeah, I could see it applicable to it all, and it has for me. You know, life has been sort of a pinball machine type thing where it's all synchronicity. You know. So yeah, no, very, very much interesting, and it of course the Mesoamerican calendars are so astounding into it.
Yeah. And so many people are finding out about it. It's amazing.
There's a story from back in 1974 that fits into or was brought to my attention that happened on an auspicious a date, the date in the 52-plus year Pleiadian calendar, where once every cycle there is a day that is reserved to the communion, as it were, between us and that, because it's supposed to be a major point in the soul's transmigration, a frequent home of our relatives into it. But the it was in 1974, and I was living on the Westerbeck Ranch in the Valley of the Moon on Sonoma Mountain. And had gone there with Stan Krippner and a number of what we called ourselves Krippnerites in it, all parapsychologists. And we had gone to, you know, a number of places researching many different things, including the out-of-the-body experiences or remote viewings of at Stanford Research Institute of Ingo Swann and Pat Price and others. And Rolling Thunder was coming around fairly frequently. And anyway, on this one day, I had felt compelled to try to travel out into the universe. And did so, and came upon this world where they were able to recognize, you know, my astral form or dream form or whatever, and showed me around, since I had so loved so many different wildernesses here in this country. We went to the wildernesses, and they asked me how it was, and I said, well, you know, it was incredible, but it just didn't really compare to ours. And they explained that, well, everything had been put back together, that technology had just about devastated their planet, and that one of the major keys to the restoration was this solar generator, which was a version of what we would call the Crookes radiometer, the light bulb-shaped device with black and white spinning vanes inside of it that spin in light. That and they, you know, showed me different things about it, and it was very much a power to the people type situation where everybody or each community was making their own power and doing so in a slightly individualized way, just sort of like the wind vanes in this country 200-300 years ago. And yeah, so when I, you know, came back as it were with that to me was really a life-changing. Stan had always preached that that any of this development of any psychic potential was best put onto healing, and this to me was the world healing. So I have, for the last 42 years, they've been trying to do this, which has mostly just amounted to preaching the concept unto myself. It's involved an awful lot of exploration and just some experimentation, and it just is resoundingly so that this is the answer. And so I really hope that if there is anybody out there listening who is looking for an answer, that they could pick up on this, and you know, it would be really great to turn around some of this destruction that we are doing to the planet.
So right now I should probably be playing Leonard Cohen's Road to Hell, right? you heard that one, huh?
Passing through. Yeah,
this ain't no technological miracle. This is the road to hell. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, it's too much of a good thing, you know. But, it's... just let the spirit lead, and we're enjoying what you're saying. We're digging it.
Yeah, well, great. Yeah, that was, those were some really incredible times back there in the Stan Krippner's first California days. You know, the dead would frequently come up and play for his enjoyment. And there was at Sonoma State, there was a stage all set up, and it was, you know, in 1972, I was Sundancing. The first time I was Sundancing, I had first gone to Sundance in '64, but didn't become a Sundancer until '72, and And the person whose job it was to kind of keep you in line, sort of, you know, nudged me with his stick there, and I thought I was totally in line or whatever. And he said in English, and there wasn't much English spoken then there, are you thinking of going to school? And I said, no. And he said, well, you should. And he just sort of poked his stick up into the sky, and there in block letters were L-U. And there was only one school at that time that I could find with those initials, Lawrence University. So I went there and became the school's fourth. They were at that time, I think, like 125 years old, the fourth scholar of the university and the first who wasn't a senior. I was a freshman.
And where's this located?
This is in Appleton, Wisconsin.
Ah, interesting. That's where the...
Yeah, they had gone up to around where the Oneida were finally located. And some of the Iroquois ways had rubbed off on the school, so that every year they ratified their constitution, much as the Iroquois do. And,
well, that's where Miracle the White Buffalo was born, right, Mark?
Janesville, Wisconsin. Actually south and a little bit west. So it was in south central Wisconsin.
Okay.
Some years ago when Stan was visiting me here in Arizona, we went to see seven white buffalo that were here out by the Grand Canyon. So it's really amazing that when I was a kid in Great Falls, Montana, we had a son of a big medicine who was the last of then the white buffalo. And son of was only partially albino. But, you know, of course, all the prophecies with the return of the white bison, and they certainly are back.
So you, because of your proximity to how did you get involved so early with, of course, you're in Montana, you're not too far away from those reservations, but how did you get drawn in at 10 years old?
Well, it was nine. I had just always sort of felt that I was an Indian. I'm only an eighth Iroquois. Great-grandfather was Frank Anderson, who was Seneca and fought in the Civil War. But his Swedish wife and five of their seven children succumbed to TB, and the Iroquois being totally matrilineal, my grandma ended up going into an orphanage until some relatives on the Swedish side who'd gone to Montana pulled her out there.
So that was sort of the
blood connection, and Rocky Boy has always been, it's right in between Glasgow, where I was conceived, and Great Falls, where I was born. I don't know, you know, what meaning that has, but I first went there when I was nine as a kid for a month, just on my own to stay, you know, to enjoy whatever.
So your parents were down with it, obviously, or did you hitchhike?
No, my mom got me a ride and a family to stay with through the Catholic missionary whose father she knew. So yeah, they were helpful towards it. and supportive of it always. It was my mom was very proud of her ancestry.
Yeah, wow, that's interesting. So,
But anyway, back to the story there. So, I ended up going to Lawrence University, and they had ratified this constitution, and hadn't noticed that the a sentence had been deleted in it about a scholar of the university just being a last term seniors. And still it was in it that it had to be, you know, unanimously accepted by the faculty, and there had to be three advisors assigned to it. So I became a scholar of the university and did much the same as I had been doing before I had gone to school, which was just hitchhiking around the country, you know, running into people, and in some places at times going to meet people like Joseph Epes Brown and John Neihardt, and just some of my heroes, you know, and going to various tribes and the Crow Dogs and in Rosebud and what have you. But the so I was going off to California studying. My scholar of universityship was really in phenomenology, which was sort of the only thing that everyone could agree on or accept as far as studying parapsychology, which very much interested me. So I went to California to study with Milan Rizal, who had defected from Czechoslovakia before Dubček opened up the borders there, and with Alexander Everett, the founder of Mind Dynamics, man who considered himself the teacher of the teachers. Werner Erhard and many others were his students back in those days. But the Alexander was putting on a seminar that was being studied by some master's students of Stan's up in Sonoma State. So I went up there, and I believe, you know, in the first week, most of the Grateful Dead and a lot of the Jefferson Airplane came and put on a little concert. And, you know, I had... I had the new vision of where I should be and what I should be doing. So I left Lawrence University and went to Sonoma State. And also there was another teacher besides Stan Crypter there. There was David Perry, who did the film Sucking Doctor on his aunt, Essie Parrish, Kashaya Pomo, who had the pleasure to work with for some time too. And David had worked with the Blackfeet and the Hopi and different Lakotas and such, and we knew a lot of people in common, and so Sonoma State was such an incredible place. But then, as I say, back in 74 I had this experience there, so I felt like, you know, no matter how enjoyable my academic was, that there was, after about a year plus of trying to get this solar generator going, get some people's attention, I, in frustration, came back to Arizona thinking that, you know, perhaps it would be more possible here, because of the profusion of sunlight. And in 1976 was going to be a solar energy year in Arizona, and I tried to get my master's in engineering at ASU on the project, but they said that no master's students worked on their own projects and very few doctoral students, and you know, I had no interest in the degree, only getting the project done.
Yeah, I know that feeling.
Yeah, right. And then since then, it's been you know, the bumpers getting one bumper after another. I was in the fresh juice business for over 8 years, and unfortunately, my land was really desired. It was back when Phoenix was a one freeway town and it had good freeway access, and they thought I was holding up. They said at one point 10,000 acres of development. You know, all I was doing was just being my business on my land. But so I faced 8 years of continuous litigation on three fronts, city, county, and state, and had some 120 plus years put on me, and and I'm no longer in the juice business, but anyway, I did want to reiterate this solar generator, this technology. I think most people, if they have ever seen a Crookes radiometer, can relate to it. They can recall that the light bulb shaped thing with the vanes spinning. The generators are our main form of producing electricity. And, of course, aligning everything unto the sun is the way to get beyond so many of our problems.
Did this, when you were on the other planet, did it look anything like that bulb type apparatus that you'll see in the Egyptian tombs?
Well, I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah, it's I'll have to send you a picture of that. It's really something very obviously a bulb with a filament, and it's rumored that they used some kind of light source or maybe even mirrors to concentrate sunlight. And the Cherokee, who maybe, well, we know that we migrated across the Eastern Ocean and probably from North Africa, because that's our origin story. And the Hopi too, you know, they talk about migrating out of the Middle East, and there's so many parallel stories about, like the Akhenaten story with their priesthood and the Cherokee priesthood, just about identical. But and the Cherokee got into trouble using something called white fire, which actually caused their island they were on to sink, and it was a disaster. So yeah, just kind of curious about what this thing looked like. And but anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, there would be certainly no reason why they couldn't have had the technology, because we know all the components of it. They would have been familiar with. It has to occur inside a vacuum. I can't imagine that would have been posed too much of a problem for them. But as far as the, say, vessel or glass making, they had that, the enameling. It could well have been. I wouldn't be at all surprised. As I say, we call it the Crookes radiometer, named after William Crook, who most everything he devised came to him in dreams, and he was one of the founders of the British Society of Psychical Research. But and if you go back a little over 50 or 104 years to about 1869, that was when he first discovered the radiometer. And I think back then he probably was seeing the same thing I was seeing, but not having electricity around him or whatever, saw it for nothing more than its uniqueness.
Oh, I see. Yeah, you used to be able to, if you were like at Knott's Berry Farm or so, you could get one of these things. Yeah. It's
sure.
Child.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Toys. These
yeah,
toys.
Right. Gotcha. Okay.
And if you got one 50 years ago, it would still be spinning in the sun every day at over, 3,000 plus RPM.
Huh. Yeah, if you made one big enough, it sure would turn a turbine.
Yeah, all you have to do is take those, if you're imagining it now with the vanes attached to a cup, and the cup is riding or spinning on a needle, the cup is magnet lined, and the needle has sequences of coilings, so that as the magnets go around the coilings, you're producing electricity.
I'll be darned.
I wish I was more able that I could just show you, pictures of my devices or something. I have had little demonstrations online first about 10 years ago, I guess it was, of it. But, I have to use bell jars and vacuum pumps and I consume more electricity than I produce, and having been accustomed to parapsychology work, that's sort of like, one can say, well, you're just transferring from your left hand to your right hand there, and it's meaningless. But the technology isn't. It really needs to be worked with. If there are any folks out there interested, they should pick up on it. If they are in any way desirous of any help, or if they want to help me or whatever, that would be great too. But I do honestly believe that this would be a major answer for our planet, that this is unlimited, really, electrical power, and this goes to the user, so it becomes or could become power for the people. So a lot of this elitism that is destroying so many of the basic tenets of the Americas could possibly be reversed. We've this freedom and such is no joke. It was fought for in on this land hundreds and hundreds of years before any white man ever came around. And those rights have only been eroded by the invasion, and this has to be reversed.
I got a picture up on it so people will see it, and also tag your interview with Crook's Radiometer.
Well, that's really good. Yeah, that's probably really so much more important than anything I've got to say. If someone would say, well, this could possibly be a solution, let me look into it. Someone who is more capable. Or someone who has capabilities that could help me. However it could be, it's one of those things that shouldn't be possessed.
Is there some kind of specific skills or things that you're asking for some help with, or some people, or
to
give people an idea of what you're looking for?
Everything. Yeah, practically everything. There is.
I know,
on the scale of where this should be going, uh-huh. We should be producing electricity. We should be sharing it. Since only half of the world gets the sun at any one time, we should be sharing it with the half that doesn't have it. Our means of sharing it should be using the natural electromagnetic lines of the earth, so that we're making electromagnets out of them, as it were, that will help stabilize the poles, because that's got to be our major fear, in this planet's life. On average, every 100,000 years, there's been a pole switch. And there hasn't been one for 700,000 years, and that's kind of allowed things to get to the point where they're at. But a lot of the symptoms that classically precipitated these pole changes, normally they were caused by volcanoes and such, we can see going on right now with the heating of, you know, and the breakdown of what the pole masses were and such. And it's
have you seen the data that's coming out of the European Space Agency? It's not everything's being put public, but they, years ago, I forget exactly what year, they launched a series of satellites. They worked together. It's called Swarm. And their whole their main purpose is to monitor the Earth's magnetic fields. And if you look at it, they show the first, 2014 was the first time I saw something. And then I saw another one, I was waiting, and I saw another one here recently in 2016. And it showed a marked difference. So it looked to me.
Oh, I know. I'm so fearful of this. You know, to me, it's such a terrible burden because I feel like I've had the solution, and I have. You know, it's not my solution, as it were. I'm nothing more than a spectator of it, but the. And just not being able to do it, you know. I mean, there's are undoubtedly people out there who could say, "What I could build one of those tomorrow that would
I think there's another component here, though, too. There's a component of what you're looking at, and then there's another component, which is where Blue Otter was wanting to go. With talking about the ghost dance, and in the original aspect of the ghost dance, it wasn't just a circle, it was a spiral, a spiraling energy pattern. Pilater has another one, Robert Three Eagles, that knows some things about this and the energy that can be done by locking in with the ley lines and certain patterns, and then the people with the right intent, and you can couple all those together, and you can have things happen that way too. So what's coming to my mind is that may be another direction that you might want to team up on, work with people on, and how to go to another level where you're not just the kind of the technological viewpoint of it, but the other side of the coin is the kind of the more consciousness spiritual connection into it. And that is where I think
I believe that's where all the time has elapsed. That's been the ongoing evolution.
And I think it's also where your worries are concerned about the earth and the fields and stuff, where that's going to it's going to have more benefit. And so that's kind of interesting because this is all moving back in that thought pattern that Blue Otter had, was wanting to move it into how the original intent of the ghost dance was the dance of friendship and welcome and stuff. It was to create an attitude and a balance and a harmony and peace between people and have them work with each other and break down the barriers where, you know, people get mad at each other, fight, and want to do all kinds of stuff, but reach a point where they welcomed each other and did that. And if they do that, you know, what happens versus the other thing that happened was some people took it and made it into a kind of a more quasi-militaristic aspect of it and got it to be, well, we'll be protected, this, this, and this, and it changed the whole nature of it, and it brought about a lot of problems because of that. So the original intent and attitude was good, but that got changed. And I think it's the same thing here, is if we I remember one thing the Hopi elders said. They said your attitude towards doing something is more important than actually doing it, or at least as important. So the intention and the where you're trying to head with it, focus is really the key. And so if that's what you're wanting to do, and then getting other like-minded people to work with each other of the same consciousness and caliber, then they can make things happen quite a bit. And that's so I think that...
Well, as my free dad always said, one monkey, no God show. And that's, you know, about the way it is, too.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, but
yeah,
I think
I
they...
have, got a Ghost Dance shirt back in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Traded, you know, numerous things for it and such. That's has been used in a few of the dances. And then I have Broken Ropes, who did the winner counts for Bigfoot's band. And whose original winter count of Wounded Knee is in the higher, the Smithsonian now, their New York City, if it's still their collection to it. But I have one that he painted on a cow skin. The same thing, though, that is the full winter count of Wounded Knee. So there's been a strong connection, and then back in 73, when I was a scholar of the university, I was passing from the northern route from the east into the west, well, ultimately then to the meeting Stan Krippner, and passed through Wounded Knee. Spent some time there, but the sheriffs and everybody weren't too welcoming. And I continued after a while on my way.
Did you happen to see a red-haired lady driving a station wagon, trying to get stuff in there?
Well, if I did, I didn't notice.
Yeah, a friend of mine, she drove five loads of stuff past Dickie Wilson's goons, and... her name was Zula Brinkerhoff. She was David Monongi's adopted daughter. She was a spokesman for the traditional Hopi for quite a long time. She had been personal secretary to the governor of Utah and wrote God's Chosen People of America. Anyway, yeah, that's you figured, yeah, you probably had at least been through there.
Yeah, yeah. And then, of course, Pedro, who was born there, frequently has come around during the siege.
Sad times.
Well, I don't know. They were, and there were some strong times too. You know. Really,
oh yeah, yeah.
There was a lot of national consciousness that got caught up with it. It was on a radio program back in 1965. It was sort of the radio version of what was the TV program America that came to, at that point I was lecturing class in Montana, fifth grade class, because that's when they studied Montana history, including the Indians of Montana. And by that time, I'd been to quite a number of the reservations. But they came and I told them the version of Greasy Grass or Little Bighorn or Custer's Last Stand. That I had that had been related to me, which might have been, you know, the first time it was really put out there of you know, what perhaps it was all about. But the Black Power was just at that point in its real little infancies, and you know, I spoke that that there would be, you know, because this is a prophecy program. This might have been one of my only little prophecies, that there would be a Red Power movement one day, which at that time still seemed a bit obscure because, you know, things were kind of still dying down mostly.
Well,
so a lot
happened.
Of progress has been made in the last 50 years of what's going on.
Yeah, and you've certainly been witness to it. It's amazing.
Well, I have been fortunate in some ways that way. You know, it's sort of a consciousness thing. I know my grandpa, he came into a horse and buggy day and saw the moonshot. So, you know, all of those technologies, cars and airplanes and such came about in his time. And I think that we have, in my time, I'll witness something sort of beyond technology. I mean, not that we don't have computers and, you know, we've gone in some real little strange ways. But I think that the real movement is something very different. And I do believe that the solar generator has a real big part in that. I've been lucky enough to have worked with many people you related to, but also Tlacayel and Quetzalcoatl and Philip Cassador so many, 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 and you know, we haven't even mentioned any in the real free or Blackfeet world, and those were just because they're just friends, just childhood friends or whatever, you know. But the
absolutely. Well, how do you keep body together?
Excuse me?
How do you keep body and soul together down there in Phoenix?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I have this piece of land that I said I had to fight so hard for back in the Juice days there. And even though part of my thought in coming to Phoenix was that, you know, the world's going to hell and I'll be the first one there, it really is resoundingly shows that, you know, no, this is heaven. This is the garden. This is paradise. This is everything. So I get that so much, you know, from my land. It's only 5 acres, but it's still really feeds my soul. And I've had 5 of my children born here to it. And I've had since 1981, you know, one spot here, my sweat lodge. Certainly prayer is the main way to do it. As far as a business goes, I make coolant recovery systems, the overflow tanks for diesel-sized applications to handle the expansion of radiators or heat exchangers.
Good. That sounds like a good, solid business.
Well, you know, it is. It's unfortunate, but antifreeze kills an awful lot of animals because it expands and spills on the road. And most of brands of it are real sweet, and you know, it's a terrible death. So it's a little thing that does a little bit of help or whatever, but it's you know how it is in this world. Just to survive is full time. You know, I'm not sure that 500 years ago we would have spent maybe quite so much time just trying to keep our bellies full.
And no kidding, no kidding. But you know, if you're not doing anything in August, I want to invite you to join us in Illinois. If you can get there on your own nickel, they will put you up, and they'll pay your conference fees, we really need you there, because there's going to be a lot of presenters and after the 11th through the 13th is the public conference, and then after that through the next weekend, this conference is a spinoff sponsored by the Riverside and Peace Project and the Grandmothers Cover the Earth Foundation, which is an offshoot of the 13 Grandmothers. It's going to be a big deal. They're already getting invitations to take this conference, which is called Honoring the Ancestors of Ancient America. They're already getting offers to bring it to Mexico, to Mongolia. If you can get away for 10 or 11 days, just get there. They'll take care of you, and you'd have a major input. I know they would show you a lot of respect, and you help us put together the ghost dance. maybe the first time it's done just exactly as it was shown in the Billy Jack movie, which is the way Volca's grandson showed that it should be done. So, yeah, I want to extend the something to think about.
Hey, yeah. You have to send me a link or something. So
I will. I've got it.
I've got it there, and yeah, I stay very. it drives my wife crazy. You know, very, very flexible that way, where I don't really try to make any plans.
Yeah, well, hey.
You know, and yet somehow it gets done, it happens, I don't know. I imagine if I was a different way, the solar generator might be a little further along than it is. But I do believe that, you know, it might be just in a nick of time or whatever, but it will come about, and it will, you know, have its impact, and I'm not in any way wed to it. You know, I don't care. If it can happen, and my great-great-great-grandchildren can all benefit, then that is just there could be nothing more glorious.
Well, they talk about
whether whether I'm a part of it or whether I'm just someone who's speaks a few things and those more capable pick it up and do it. You know, they would do it with my blessings.
Yeah, you know, people
but
talk
it,
about flying
for
500.
Supreme blessings, we would do it in a way that really is a power to the people and is an empowerment and is a supreme realization of how blessed we all are, and how, you know, we are all so provided for, and how we're all meant to share.
Yeah, well, you know, for 500 years they talked about fly until somebody figured it out, and all they had to do was look at the way a bird's wing really worked.
And you know, compared to the phenomena of flying, this solar generator is just nothing. It's kids' play, you know? I hope out there's some 10-year-old kid right now who hears this and says, well, wait a minute, you know, and goes ahead and just makes himself a little 10 kW generator or whatever. That will, you know, be operating constantly.
And it'll probably be some kid that does it.
It sure could be. Yep. But at the same time, there is there are, you know, certain requirements to really do it on the proper scale and such that, you know, it's that we need to seriously address, you know, as far as design and implementation and material and yada yada, right?
That's right. Well, if you're running out of steam, you know, we can keep going, or we can sign off. It's the time's yours.
Well, it's you guys' show, so I'm just in. I'm trying to oblige. I just had first and foremost that one point, and I think it's sort of been made. And from there, you know, I'm at your disposal. Anywhere you want to go with it, I am open.
Yeah, let's keep in touch. And on the way out, I'll play. I got on YouTube while you guys were talking, and I downloaded The Road to Hell. So I'll play that on the way out, and then I'll touch up the your bio here, so and the tags on it, so it'll attract people to the. If you can send me some keyword tags, I can add them to the interview, and maybe a picture. Be nice, and or pictures or whatever you want. And
yeah, I wish I had.
I know what you mean. I'm like you. My mother was a avid photographer, and I used to take a lot of pictures, but I don't have a lot of them myself. I just don't think of doing that. But anyway, we sure appreciate you making the appearance. Let's keep in touch.
All right, sounds great. And hey, if you guys ever get out to Arizona, Phoenix, and such, look me up.
Oh, absolutely. I worked back in the mid '80s, basically to fund my wife and I's genealogical research. I took a job finding natural gas leaks, and I spent winter out there in that area with Southwest Gas down in Tucson, mostly. And but the crew chief was from he called it Phoenix,
yeah.
And Lauro Pinon. I got to I bet Lauro's still around, and he said if I ever needed some herb, and I was in Phoenix, to stop by, and he took me up. So.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll let you go. We'll fire up Road to Hell and say goodnight, and we'll see everybody next week.
Hey guys, appreciate it. Thanks for the opportunity.
You bet. Thanks so much, Mark. We'll see
everybody
next week. Good night, everybody. Out of bed. Hi, friends. This is Will Bluewater. If you have been listening to our program for long, then you know that Mark the Badger Borcherding does a Mayan birth reading for each of our interview guests. Mark suggested that he give away a free reading for each donation of $20 or more to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a ministry of Oklahoma Native American Church or the White Roots of Peace. So please support Prophecy Keepers Radio by making your free will offering at nativeamericanchurch.us, and you'll receive this gift reading. If you choose to make a recurring donation, once you've received your own reading, you can give readings away as free gifts. So why not head over to nativeamericanchurch.us and make an offering right now. Hope to be talking with you soon. Bye now.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater, encouraging you to obtain an authorized participant or AP card and become a federally recognized Native religious practitioner. Presently, Oklahoma Native American Church is the only Native American church spiritually blessed by the Rosebud Reservation Native American Church and has a certificate of existence in the state of Utah that is authorized to worship on or off tribal grounds and has met the standard of sincerity and vow of poverty standards in the state of Utah and federal courts. This card is designed to assist all people regardless of their racial makeup, political affiliation, social and/or financial status, and receiving their constitutional rights. This card is also designed to assist United States judicial officials to honor their solemn oath to protect and exercise the principles of the United States Constitution while carrying out their duty and serving their fellow citizens. To join the movement that is strengthening and exercising the principles of the United States Constitution, please obtain your AP card by visiting NativeAmericanChurch.us today.
Dry ground, sagebrush and mesquite and chaparral around, out away's a big dust devil moving on its way. I guess they're never still. In a sacred manner I live, to the heavens I in a sacred manner I live. My horses are many. The high grass and the cedar, the mighty oak and the tiny flower, the sandstone in the valley, mountains high and running streams. In a sacred manner I live, to the heavens I gaze. In a sacred manner I live. My horses are many. One with